It's Wednesday, September 16th, 2009, and you're listening to episode 163 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 56 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
My name's Chad.
My name's Wayne.
My name is Pat.
And my name is Chris.
And tonight we tried yet again to get Sean Patrick Fannin on, and technology failed us yet again.
So instead of our expected guest host, we had the guest host of technical difficulty.
You know what I think I need to do is actually download an older version of Skype, because the problem is the best recording tool I have found for getting a stereo recording reliably and always recoverably off of Skype is Hot Recorder.
Yeah.
And Hot Recorder only supports Skype through version 3.
And all the interviews we've have done before have all been through Hot Recorder
on a prior version of Skype.
I've done before.
You know, so, Chris, I was thinking that, you know, audio sounds much better off of 45s instead of this newfangled crap that we have today. What do you think, Chris?
I agree. 45s. I grew up on listening to 45s, as a matter of fact, and I had my own record player, and it was a record player. It wasn't a stereo system. It was a record player.
And it sounded better. People that listen to, like, their CDs and God forbid, the MP3s. It's nothing compared to the good old 45.
If there is one thing we're criticized for, it's being too up-to-date.
LPs of the way, baby.
All right. So while we're on the topic, I have to congratulate Chris for the American can-do spirit, because physicists the world over said it was impossible. But Chris said, screw you, science.
That's right. You know, he slapped Stephen Hawking in the face.
Yes.
That's why he's in a wheelchair, because I slapped him.
That's why he was out of his wheelchair, because Chris slapped him.
Yeah, apparently there were two or three of them. It was a
you pedantic
sort of space-time continuum thing.
Why don't you go back to not saying anything?
He said, ow, when I slapped him in the face.
Oh my God!
Chris, wow. I love you now, too.
But
wow.
Chris, yeah, I hit him in the, like, the face. I'm a woman.
That's Chris at feartheboot.com.
But despite them saying it was not possible, Chris ignored them, and he got older anyway.
Indeed.
So, happy birthday, Chris.
Happy birthday, Chris.
Well, thank you very much, gentlemen. It's been an interesting birthday. We're actually very busy here in the homestead, so I haven't had a full and honest celebration of my birthday, but I appreciate it nonetheless. Thank you very much.
So, Chris, how do you celebrate birthdays after your second century?
It goes down to something that we like to call, those of us in my group, we like to call it the Connor McLeod syndrome. Well, we light a candle, of course, and then we go on and we kind of just wander the world looking for others of our ilk, and then we fight each other. And that was really kind of lame, but that was about the best I could do.
So what you're saying, a Hummer?
I wish. All
right. So Pat, from last episode, you found Devil Creams.
Yeah, I did. Because I couldn't think of the name of the snack food that I was trying to compare to Suzy Q's. And then with the help of the forum, we came to find out that it was Devil Dogs is what they call them on the East Coast. And then I was looking around for stuff this week, and I came across Devil Creams, which look exactly like the ones that are pictured in the post that was on the forum. So, and we had them, all right. Yeah. Chad and I have had one. So they're not really like Suzy Q's,
and they're not really good, you know.
nor good for you.
Nor good for you. Well, let me put it to you this way: one of those was half the calories of my entire lunch today.
Wow. Yeah. I gotta give it to you, though. I mean, you may not remember the name, but you certainly know how to find your junk food.
Speaking of Devil Dogs, you guys remember, and this was kind of a minor internet, is it Mamie? Mimi? My Mai?
Meme.
Meme.
I always thought it was
Meme. I hate words that don't use English.
Wow! Take that, Uganda! Germany, screw you in that non-English.
You are gay.
No, but yeah, it was called Rattleskull and Devil Dog, a little animated short back when Flash animations were just really kind of starting out. Any of you guys? Bueller? No? All right. Go on.
Old-timey piano.
So this was back when computers had vacuum tubes.
Well, this is the guy that doesn't like talkies. So
this is back when Packard Bell computers were still around.
Movies jumped the sharks when they went to talkies.
Oh, totally.
So
that Basil Rathbone.
Oh, he was good though.
I didn't really have Flash animation before Strong Bad.
I'm an Errol Basil Flynn fan as well, though.
Basil Rathbone is obviously not a silent movie star, but he was the guy who was known as the ultimate...
The definitive
Sherlock Holmes until...
Jeremy Brett.
Jeremy Brett came out.
You and I are both
Jeremy Brett. And there's a Guy Ritchie is doing a Sherlock Holmes movie.
And I was going to say, how do you think...
It's going to be crap because Jeremy Brett's dead.
Well, true. It looks very bad. How do you think Iron Man is going to do as Sherlock Holmes?
I think it'll do very well.
Is it him or is it Johnny Depp?
No, it's Robert Downey Jr.
So yeah, Iron Man as Sherlock Holmes.
I'm not worried about him as an actor. It's the script. The movie looks like crap.
The trailer looks really, really bad.
Yeah.
I'm a huge fan of the books. I'm a big fan of Sir Arthur Conan Doyle.
You know, if Jeremy Brett were alive right now, he wouldn't stand for this.
It's true.
Define, what do you mean by bad?
I haven't even seen the trailer yet.
Because,
actually,
Chris, here's the problem with resurrecting or trying to redo an existing intellectual property. That intellectual property means something. And when you go in and change everything that made that intellectual property what it is bullshit to call it by its original name. You need to call, this needs to be Detective X. This is not a Sherlock Holmes movie.
It looks more like Get Smart than Sherlock Holmes. Yes,
exactly. It's
did they steampunk Sherlock Holmes?
Yes.
Yes, they did.
It's kung fu fighting.
Oh, kung fu steampunk Sherlock Holmes. Yes.
Sherlock Holmes is useless. And
your statement is correct, but only if you add the words that when the intellectual property means something to someone. I would venture to say that the majority of people out there
never heard of Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah, don't have a frame of reference for what that really is. So that, to me, that's a safe IP.
If that really is the case, I worry about society. If reading has gotten that far that many people haven't read these.
What are you smoking and where can I get some?
Listen, I think that many people have heard of Sherlock Holmes and maybe have a rough idea of what he's like, but they don't have the same emotional attachment to it than you guys do.
It hasn't been around for a long time. Like you said, for us, Chad, we had Jeremy Brett back, you know, 20 years ago.
Stop for a second here. The basic idea of Sherlock Holmes is there's a guy who, through his superior intellect
and raging cocaine addiction,
but through his superior intellect, goes out and solves mysteries. You want to tell me this is an entertainment trope that you think the majority of society is not familiar with?
I think that not in the way that which you're trying to do. I think that they are familiar with.
And so
the
you
name.
Have to add kung fu fighting and steampunk and all this other ridiculous stuff that has nothing to do with the feel or genre or whatever of Sherlock Holmes.
It's all about tearing down the classic hero.
A slower paced drama will not work with today's viewing audience. It just won't work.
Wow.
I completely disagree. Yeah. I think it will.
No, it's all about the Meerschaum pipe. End of story.
True.
If you don't have the pipe, it's just not worth it.
You know, as long as we're talking about old things, in two topics right in a row here, as a matter of fact, you know, me you and now Sherlock
how
Holmes.
How are you doing?
You know, I remember I used to hang out with Sherlock Holmes. No, but let me ask you guys this, as long as we, you know, if we want to actually talk about a little bit of gaming. What are some of your favorite old games that you have or have played that you want to play again or wish you could play or like to play?
You're asking this question on Fear the Boot. Which outdated games are we overly attached to?
Let me rephrase that.
For me, it's Rifts. Totally. God, I love Rifts.
Man, okay.
I've never heard of Man, the role-playing game.
Oh, you're missing out, Chris.
I love Twilight 2000. In fact, I didn't think it was crunchy enough. What show have you been listening to for the past 3 years?
You know, all right, fine, but just to play his game.
Get older. Let's pretend it's 1986.
I think I got
Renegade Legion. I thought it had a great space combat system, excepting the fact that it's nearly impossible to represent 3D movement on a table. I think Renegade Legion did a fantastic job of converting Newtonian physics and reasonable space battle into a game that, to me, did not play like World War II Dogfighters. Renegade Legion is a game that I'll say I really
miss. Did you ever play the Leviathan box game for Renegade Legion?
I did not.
Because that was the Capital Ship one, you know.
Yes, I am familiar with it. I never played it. I only played Renegade Legion.
Okay. I knew he'd bore his players
I
too
did.
Much.
I honestly have to say I liked Renegade Legion. I liked the way they did damage. That was an interesting... That was
like a circuit diagram?
Yeah, it was like pretty clever. That you would lay over your tank depending upon where... You roll a die to see where your shot hit along the tank side, and that's where you put the starting point for this template. And then you could create holes in the armor, and you could do things which was called widowing armor. So if for some reason a previous hit kind of, you know, crossed with a current hit, any armor that was caught in between would also be gone as well. So it was a very interesting and unique damage template for its time, and it used that same type of damage thing in Crimson Skies, the board game, as well.
Well, they also brought some of that back in their final swing. And by they, I mean Fasa's final swing at, what was the space game for Battletech? Not Aerotech, but...
Battle Space.
They took some of the concepts, but not the damage tree. But they took the basic Newtonian play physics, or whatever you want to call it, from the old Renegade Legion and Leviathan games and brought it forward into Battletech.
You know what I miss?
What?
The role-playing game I missed is not actually a role-playing game itself, but it's this thing that we did in the late 80s and all through the 90s that we don't do anymore.
Heroin.
Yes! But, no, it's... When we didn't play a role-playing game, it's when we would play a board game or a video multiplayer video game or something like that. And Dan, you and I did this a lot, and we would spin role-playing game elements into it that wasn't normally there. Necromunda is a perfect example.
Oh, yes.
Where we had our Necromunda gangs. There's a great story behind Necromunda, and it's a fun game, and I really enjoyed the hell out of it. And I won a tournament once, but there isn't a role-playing element in it. It's just a tactical, squad-based tactical gang game. And Dan and I would play it, and we did this with all sorts of role-playing, or all sorts of board games and video games, stuff like that, is we would give our guys personalities, and we would do actions within the game that were based on personalities. We would even, before or after the game, pull ourselves off the map and do a face-to-face RP with our gang leaders that we would have a personality developed behind.
You know, and
I really miss that. We don't do that anymore.
What you're describing right there is exactly why, and I'm going to make a statement that I think some people are going to find controversial, probably, and I'm not saying in all cases, but I think in a lot of cases more for emotional than intellectual reasons. The way history played out, we have Gary Gygax, Dave Arneson, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Not anymore. Too soon?
Historically. I said historically, yeah, historically. Okay. To thank for the existence of the role-playing game industry we have today. But I think had they never existed, it would have been inevitable. It would have occurred anyway. Because there are too many people like you and I and tons of people listening to the show who got their start before they even knew what a role-playing game was, taking their G.I. Joes or Transformers or whatever they were playing. Let's say even a war game. Necromunda. Lead miniature chewy Napoleon stuff.
Did you say lead miniature chewy Napoleon stuff?
A little lead.
That sounds better than Devil Dogs.
That was an intended joke. But, and then you look at
it's
it.
It's the only lead-based game you can eat after you play.
And you start saying, what do these people like? And you start coming up with rules for governing what do they like.
Yeah.
We did it with XCOM.
Mm-hmm.
I think it would have been an inevitability that a role-playing game industry of some kind would have come up regardless of the existence of certain individuals.
Do you think it'd still be so fantasy-heavy in the early days if someone else would have started it?
I think it would have depended on where they started it. Had they started it in science fiction, I think most people, instead of D&D, would think of Star Wars or XCOM or whatever. That's what do instead of D&D, it's everybody, it's those nerds playing XCOM in their capes and fangs.
Do you know there's people who do not credit Gary Gygax and Dave Arneson with creating the genesis of role-playing games? And that they say that it stretches all the way further back, all the way to H.G. Wells?
Well, I mean, if you really want to go that route, you can find some evidence of very, very rudimentary rules-based pretending you're somebody else going back into the ancient world.
And, you know, do you start incorporating improv theater into that sort of thing as well? Where you have a certain framework that the improv is happening in, but then you're kind of doing it for money. You start getting into really soft subjects like, well, is it really a game? Is there a game aspect? Is the motivation entertainment, and this is their job that they're having fun with, or is the motivation of this is a pastime that is entertaining? You
know, I think the difference with improv is with a role-playing game, you're actually doing what your character would be doing versus improv, you're doing what the overall storyline calls for. I think that's the big difference between those.
Being a pseudo-intellectual that likes hearing himself talk.
I, too, like to hear myself talk.
I don't like my own voice, but...
I want to talk about... Well, I prefer
you haven't been on Fear the Boot enough. You are not a pseudo-intellectual enough yes. yet, Wayne.
Oh, I'm a pseudo-intellectual. I just don't like listening to my own voice. I got half of it down already.
Studio.
You look like Phil Collins.
I want to talk about something that, Wayne, you brought up with comic books. We're not going to talk about comic books. We're going to talk about role-playing games. But you talked about, off mic, the free comic book day. And the problem that you saw with it, and this is a problem that I think absolutely applies as well to the free role-playing game.
And
day,
I completely agree. I have the same issue with both.
Is you're preaching to the converted.
Yeah.
Which, for anyone that cares, that's the proper saying. Preaching to the choir is the politically correct version. You're preaching to the converted. You are basically going to people that are already in the comic book shop and giving them free stuff. What you are not really doing, and I'm sure anecdotally, you might be able to take a free something or other, give it to somebody, and that brought them into the hobby. I'm sure anecdotally that occurs. But on a large scale, what you are not doing is stepping outside of the little niche subculture we live in and really getting other people exposed to what a role-playing game is.
Yep. The big problem is what they're doing is essentially both days have the same problem. It's not just that they're preaching to the choir. They're preaching to the market that they already have. They're just competing with other game makers, other comic book makers, trying to get a bigger niche of their own market. And that is not the way to grow the industry, any industry. You have to reach out to the people that you don't have in there yet. That's why basically both days, I love the concept of giving stuff away for free. Don't give it away in a comic book store. Don't give it away in a game store. Give it away in a library.
Yeah,
give it away in a movie theater. Give it away somewhere where you're reaching new audiences.
Why is it that when you go to see Iron Man, they do not hand you an Iron Man comic when you walk in the door?
Well, they actually did that with X-Men.
Yeah. Well, not enough. I didn't get mine.
Yeah, I didn't get one
they
either.
They only did it for opening night, though, and that was the problem.
Yeah.
The opening night people are the comic book fans.
Yeah.
Some comic book stores do such things. Our local gaming store, I don't know if they did it with Iron Man, but I know that they did it with a number of superhero movies that came out in 07 and maybe early 08, that they were there at one of the movie theaters for the premiere. And they had a number of related comic books out on display. They had pamphlets, you know, a pimp in their store. And they had, you know, another display that was just visually appealing. And so they did make an effort to help people realize the tie-in that exists with this kind of stuff. Now, granted, they weren't giving out things, but at the very least, they were there and they had a presence to make people know that there's more than just this movie that you're about to see.
The displays are pretty common, but again, it's the same problem. It's opening night.
Yeah.
The people that are there at midnight to go to this thing, you've already got them.
Yeah, you're preaching they're not again.
You know what the problem is? Is that the, like, with comic book stores, and this applies to hobby stores too, and this is something that Wayne has a blog post coming up about, is that the owners of the comic book shops and the hobby shops are usually not businessmen. They're usually fans. That's why they got into owning a comic book shop. But that also means something else. They're not marketers. They don't know how to market themselves.
They don't necessarily know how to do a display or anything on the retail side as well.
There's an example, the local retailer in town, the local comic and hobby shop, and they do role-playing games as well. They sponsored a midnight showing of, I want to say it's Holy Grail.
They did a ton of movies.
Yeah,
they did tons
of movie nights. And when I went to them, they had people there who I, at least as far as I could tell, were not comic book people. They were people who were there to see Holy Grail, or they were there to
Did Wrath of Khan, Princess Bride. They did a whole slew.
The people who were there were to see the movies, and there were some comic book fans like myself. But what did the guys do? They get up there, and they have a lame-ass trivia contest, and then they start talking about sales at their comic book show. We're having a fire sale, 40% off, all back issues. You want to come down for that? And half the audience there is like, what the hell is a back issue, and why would I want 40% off of one?
You know what they should have done? They should have been selling out in the lobby.
That's right.
I absolutely agree with you. What these places need to do is go to places that have folks where there is some overlap of interest. Mm-hmm. You know they're sci-fi fans, you know they're fantasy fans, you know they're superhero fans, but they're not role players, they're not comic book buyers, they're not quite fully into the geek culture. Hit them there, not just with a sample product, but with a specifically introductory product. One that's not just, here's a role-playing game or here's a comic book.
Here's a role-playing game supplement.
Yeah, here's a module for a book you have to go buy.
But something that says, look, in two or three pages, this is what a role-playing game is. This is how you can get started. We're going to break down some of the stereotypes. We're going to introduce you to the concept. And now here's a short little sample game you can run to see if you like it. And then at the end, if you liked that, here's how to get more involved. Here's websites. Here's stores. Here's other games you might like.
You know what somebody needs
to make?
Here's
for the boot episode 115.
You know what somebody needs to make is a little $5 introducing your mom to role-playing game book. Like a kit.
I'm sure it's out there.
I bet this. It's a little box package is what I'm envisioning. It doesn't cost any more than $5. And it is like a CD, something like episode 150. Use episode 115, ha ha ha. But no, something like that, some audio thing that they can put in their car and listen to and explains it. A small little booklet that explains role-playing games and stuff. And then maybe just a small little role-playing game. Like a real simple rules, simple one-shot adventure. And again, a resource document in there as well. I don't know, and some dice. And
the company that kind of almost does that is, I want to say it's, I think it's Circle 7, and they sell basically one-page RPGs, where it is. Mm-hmm. It's a simple one-page thing, rules. It comes with a prepackaged setting and adventure, and you just go and you play it, and it's specifically designed for one-shots. But it's very simple to just jump right in, do it, maybe for an evening's entertainment, almost like, you know, whipping out a, you know, game of Sorry or Monopoly.
You know what the real problem is, Chris? You have all of us sitting around here. I'm sure a lot of other people have had the same conversation about how do you get new people into the hobby. Why aren't the gaming companies sitting around having this conversation? Yeah. They've got the money to back this. They've got the money to do big pushes. And every time they do a big push, it's always aimed at their existing market.
The reason why they're not doing that is simply because of the fact that most of them are simply just trying to get macaroni and cheese instead of ramen. And they can't take that evangelical role. They have to take the role of getting as much of their core audience as they can. And so they have to put out the new book or the new supplement and hope the outreach efforts by companies larger than themselves go and do that. And, you know, that may or may not necessarily be happening.
I think he's absolutely right that fortunate or unfortunate, when you go from company to company, what you're going to see is either they don't have the wherewithal to do it, or they do, but they're so steeped in bureaucracy and suits that they're not going to know how to do it, or aren't going to see the value in doing it. Who was it that mentioned dice a second ago?
Oh, I did.
Yeah, I did. Both of you did. Okay, fine. I'll give you all credit. Everybody mentioned
dice. I said
dice. Do I get some Fear the Boot points?
Yeah, but
you get some laces.
Here's one of the things I would look at. When you talk to someone who's not a role player, what are the things that they immediately latch onto in the hobby? Great art is a great way of drawing people in. Good storytelling is a great way to draw people in. The idea you can do or be anything, great way to draw people in. Maybe a little harder to explain, but a great way to draw people in. But stuff that you can put up front that immediately gets their attention. Who have you ever met who doesn't play role-playing, and when you dump a bunch of crystal-looking polyhedral dice in front of them, they're not immediately fascinated?
You know, when I first started working in my department, I was surrounded by every single person I worked with never played a role-playing game, and I was the only person who did. And I'm very vocal about my hobbies and my life and stuff. I really don't have any normal shame, much less gamer shame.
I know that's hard to imagine.
And I remember I had to bring in my dice one day. People were asking me, it's like, because I was trying to explain what a role-playing game was, and the subject of dice, and they're like, what, like craps or something? And I'm like, no, it's like weird-shaped dice. I'm like, I'll bring some in because I keep them out of my truck because I'm that huge of a nerd. And so I brought them in and I had them laying out of my desk and people were really curious about them. It's like, why do you need this mini size?
You know
They're really tactile.
How I drew a bunch of people into the hobby, this would have been
a gun.
No, that's how I threaten people into the hobby.
Heroin.
That's actually how I get people into the back of my van.
I thought it was just free beer.
But when I was in high school in the early 90s, I happened to have with me a copy of BattleTech Technical Readout 3050. And what got several people to try BattleTech was they saw a book that was full of gigantic, badass-looking robots. And the first question was, what is this?
Yeah.
And when I kind of explained it a little bit, how do I get to pilot one of these? Because there was instantly that draw, and there was something they saw they wanted that they had never seen before in their life. They had never been exposed to in their life.
You know what, Dan? I have a story like that.
Okay.
After you and I had our late unpleasantness, our little five-year hiatus from each other, I got a group together, and we were playing BattleTech. Thing is that there was no BattleTech being published. FASA had gone under.
And Catalyst hadn't picked it up.
Catalyst and nobody had picked it up. And it was like eBay and going into really seedy hobby shops and looking under boxes and stuff and for those finds where the book is glowing and you're like, it has a $5 price tag. I can sell this for $200 on eBay.
Watch it for the back of my van to pull up.
Yeah. And all of a sudden I hear this wet thunk and then the lights go out. And
guns, drugs, and BattleTech.
Those were heady days, my friends, heady days. So some of the books were very, very rare and very expensive. And I had copies of them because I had been slowly amassing them over time. And my friends wanted them too. Well, they didn't want to pay eBay prices for them, so we decided to go up to Kinko's and photocopy them off. What, was FASA going to rise from the grave and sue me? So, you know, whatever. So I started photocopying one day. I was photocopying, and I have basically 200 pages of pictures of giant robots sitting next to me. And these 10, 13-year-old kids, although I can't say that because I mistaked a 16-year-old person for a 10-year-old the other day. But
no, you mistook.
I mistook them, and which I'm very sorry for.
I was just going to let it slide because he gets pissed at me whenever I say anything anymore.
Yeah, shut up.
Eat a devil cream.
Okay. Eat one. Eat it. So anyway, I have these stacks of pictures of robots, and these I will say 10-year-old kids come up to me, two of them. They're kind of, you know how kids do, they kind of look, and they walk by and they notice, and then they walk by again, notice, and then they're walking by again, and they're kind of dallying longer.
I see it from my van all the time. I'll post a YouTube video.
Yes, and your van says free candy on it, too.
Oh, it says all kinds of things.
Is that why you play the songs when you drive around?
I am so bringing a red pumpkin next week. So,
anyway, eventually I stop these kids, and I'm like, hey, guys, I notice that you're staring at the copies I'm making. They're like, yeah, what is that? That's so cool, because boys love big robots. And so I start telling them a little bit about, I leave off the game part, and I'm telling them a little bit about BattleTech history and stuff. And they're like, what is this from? I'm like, it's from a game. And then I start telling them about a role-playing game, and they've never heard of it before. I start telling them, I start expanding the concepts, and eventually their mother comes over, and their mother's thankfully not macing me in the face and calling the police for talking to her children, but actually, she's kind of listening too. And
I do get that in the van.
Yes. And they had to go, and I'm like, hey guys, I had a bunch of, I had been showing them the pictures and stuff, and I had a whole bunch of, I'm like, hey, go ahead, take a couple of copies. They're all copies. They're only like 3 cents a piece. I'm like, go ahead, take a couple of pages, whichever ones you like the most. And they took a couple of pages, and they're like, thank you very much. And I just have this very faint, very naive fantasy that those guys grew up and got into role-playing games because of that. Now, in reality, they probably hit the trash can as soon as they got home and never thought about it again. But I like to hold on to that false little hope.
All right. I want to talk about something related to this. Chad,
are you threatening me with that pen?
I am. That you brought up, Chad, off the mics. And we're going to have to start by agreeing on a definition. And this is a word that has a fuzzy definition, but we're going to have to agree on one.
Is it rutabaga? Ha! Ha, Wayne!
I'll add that to my spreadsheet.
Because if we can't come up with a common definition, this is going to go nowhere. So the word that we are going to define is mainstream.
Mm.
I am simply going to define mainstream for the purpose of this argument or debate or discussion or whatever it turns out to be.
Monkey knife fight?
Yes. That something mainstream is
a stream
that something that the bulk of the populace either participates in or without reservation accepts the presence of.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So let's take a particular sport. It's very possible that 50.1% of people are not watching a particular sport, but you have a significant portion of the populace.
Baseball is mainstream.
Yes.
Lacrosse is not mainstream. In America.
Hi-Li is not mainstream as much as
Miami it
so
is.
So going along those lines, would you consider, say, comic books mainstream because of all the movies?
The movies, yes. The comic books, no. Superheroes, yes, is what I would say.
VIP.
Superheroes, yes. If you say
we're not basing this off sales.
Right.
Just popularity.
Just popularity and social acceptance.
Cultural impact.
Yes. And, Chad, you made the statement earlier, which I disagree with, which is you said that you do not think it is possible for role-playing games to ever go mainstream.
Yeah.
I think they
can. Nor do I think they should go mainstream.
Okay, and I want to hear your reasoning. Let me briefly summarize my point, because I think we've largely already set it up, so I can close this out pretty quick. I think they can, because the concepts are popular. The idea of swords and sorcery or big robots or spaceships or whatever are wildly popular.
Mm-hmm.
Storytelling and game playing are wildly popular. I think what stands between role-playing games and mainstream status is an understanding of what the hobby is and an opportunity to really see its attractive aspects. And we've talked about for the past 30 minutes where we think the ball's been dropped. And I think if the ball were not being dropped, or someday somebody picks it up and runs it right, you could see an explosion of popularity of role-playing games. You disagree.
Yes.
Why?
I disagree as well, actually.
Okay, you both disagree. You're both wrong, but I want to hear why.
All right, I think the boat's already sailed. I think that opportunity was there.
Uh-huh.
It was there 10, maybe 20 years ago. At this point, if you look at the course of media, everything is going visual now. And I don't want to get into one of those, these kids these days, but everyone wants...
But these kids these
days.
Yeah,
these kids these days don't have the same interest in reading. It's the same reason you're having, you know, a decline in book sales, a decline in comic books.
But
they want something visual.
I couldn't disagree with you more on about the whole ship has sailed business, but go ahead, Dan, make your point.
Well, here's my question, though, Wayne. I am with Chris. I also don't know if the ship has sailed, but couldn't that concern be addressed simply by producing the right kind of role-playing game? Find one that's more visual, that's more rules light, that's more, you know, it's more hands-on, it's not hero system.
I think the industry can grow, don't get me wrong. I think there can be big growth, but I don't think it can reach the mainstream, because like I said, it's definitely a more visual. They want to see movement on screen. Now, maybe if technology reaches the point where you can somehow, you know, have a holodeck or something, then it has a chance again. But
see, while I agree with Wayne, I take a slightly different angle on it, slightly different color on it. My view is that the trend of entertainment in America, mind you, and I think that when you go outside of America, this tends to change quite a bit.
That is a good point. I was only talking about the trends in America.
In ways that I can't define because I don't live in Japan.
Let's face it, if it's mainstream in Japan, I don't know it and I don't want to know it.
Yeah.
It's not mainstream to me.
Oh, okay. Fair enough.
So,
continue.
So I'm just talking from the American perspective. I've seen a trend in entertainment where it's going towards people want to be entertained. People don't want, or at least I don't think they don't want, to generate their entertainment.
So what you're saying is you think the trend is towards passive consumption,
yes,
as opposed to active or proactive involvement.
Definitely. And it's also less intellectual is the direction it seems to be going.
I don't want to say less intellectual, because when I look at video games, for instance, I think that video games have gotten more intellectual over time.
Puzzle Quest, great example.
Puzzle Quest is a great example. Well, look at BioShock. BioShock is all about Ayn Rand, and it's all about what's her thing called?
Objectivism.
Objectivism and all that sort of stuff. You look at Fallout. Fallout's about moral choices in a very immoral world and how those choices impact people. I think that besides a technical sophistication, I think that a lot of sophistication has come to video games. And I think that a lot of sophistication has come to movies. Whereas I look at, like, movie plots today. Now, granted, there's a lot of stuff like Crank 2 and
Transformers,
First and Fast and Furious. Don't get me wrong. You know, I look at, like, old movies, which were highly entertaining. They were very wide in their scope, sometimes their epicness, you know, especially with like some of the old John Wayne movies and that sort of thing. But they didn't go very deep. I mean, they had a lot of great acting, but the writing wasn't real deep. I mean, you had to get guys like Alfred Hitchcock to kind of come out with that deepness. And you look at movies nowadays, and they're starting to deal with some really interesting subject matter, some really interesting stuff, and trying to take movies that are mainstream in ways that movies weren't mainstream back then, where, like, you had very specific art house Sergio Leone and a Akira Kurosawa type movie makers who were really trying to push the envelope. Nowadays, you can get a movie out there that everybody will see that pushes the envelope. But beyond that, beyond this sort of...
So let's bring this back to role-playing games. Where are we going with this?
Because I can talk all day about movies.
I know, and I follow what you're saying.
Yeah.
So I
don't think it's not an anti-intellectualism. I really don't like this idea of the idiocracy, the movie that people are getting stupider and stupider and stupider. I don't believe it.
Okay, so what is the issue?
So what the issue is that I do think, though, that people want a passive consumption. I think that they want to consume media rather than create media.
You know, that's actually a good point. There was a guy at work the other day, even that was just talking about that. We were talking about how much, you know, how big history buffs we are, how much we're reading books here and there. And he's like, yeah, I'm a history buff too. I watch the History Channel.
Yeah.
He's like, I have no interest in picking up the book. If I had interest, I'd go out and rent, you know, whatever History Channel did on it.
And I think books are an example as well. Reading is still taking off. People are still reading, and that's an intellectual pursuit, even if the book is not intellectual, but still, to me, that's passive consumption. You're not creating the story. You're not creating the book. You don't have a part in it. It's something. It's a media you're consuming. It's just a different way you're doing it. To change tracks on my point, though, to a different angle, is that I look at role-playing games, and there is a huge stigma. We're in the age of nerd chic. What's the most nerdy thing you can do? Play a role-playing game. And it's nerd chic. Nerds are popular. Chicks dig nerds. Still, role-playing games are off the radar.
Well, and I think that goes back to what we've been talking about earlier, which is, and we've talked about in many different episodes, the mainstream media has not helped. Even geeks within the mainstream media have not helped the cause by the way they portray role players and role-playing games. To us, it's humor. Mm-hmm. To the outside world, it's truth. And within this episode, we've talked about the failure of outreach to the right people in the right way at the right location.
Do you think it's possible for media, like a television show or movie, to have a character in the show be a geek who isn't socially awkward or embarrassing?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
I mean, the fact that nobody's bothered to do it. Chris, I want to hear your take on all this, and then I'm going to browbeat Pat.
I kind of split the road on this a little bit, because I can certainly see Chad's point. But at the same time, I think that Wayne had said about the ship already having sailed. I don't agree with that, only in the sense that while, yes, we do need some sort of visual medium to help the situation, I think that we're headed in that direction and that opportunity is still going to come up. I have not played any MMORPGs at all. But it seems to me that every incarnation is just a recreation of what was done before, but it's just the setting is just a little bit different. At some point in time, that is going to get old. And
some point in time was 2004, and it ain't stopped nobody yet.
Well, just like any other popular genre, it does burn itself out after time and kind of fades away. And usually replaced by something else. And I think that time will come when someone creates some sort of open system that allows for role-playing to occur. And that is still as graphically as stimulating as what you get with an MMO.
Have you guys ever thought of the possibility that might occur for role-playing games? That role-playing games as a fad will fade out and fade away or morph and change into something that isn't even definable as a role-playing game anymore before it goes mainstream?
The traditional definition of people sitting around a table, I don't think that that will ever actually completely go away. Will that particular type of thing become mainstream? The only way I would honestly see that particular type of gaming becoming mainstream is if you play with a rules system that is no more complex than the HeroQuest board game, with those rules where there's a defined sense of movement and the combat system is nothing more than, or everything is determined by a couple of rolls of some regular D6s. If you get more complex than that, then I think that you are causing the chances of it becoming mainstream become less and less.
I want to pick Pat's brain on the subject since he's been so polite and quiet this whole time.
He's such a good little boy.
I've been sitting and listening to everything that people have been saying, and my opinion is sort of a little bit of probably of what you guys are saying. I'm going to continue with sort of what Chris is saying. And I think in my mind, when you talk about mainstream and role playing going mainstream, I'm thinking about it in very broad term. I don't want to get as specific. If you think about it in a big picture sort of a way, I think that for it to go mainstream, it's like just what Chris says, it's going to become more and more simple. Because let's take an example. Mm-hmm. The best example that I can think of is like a band. You know, whenever a band is first starting out, it's got its core group of fans that know about the band.
Yeah.
And the masses don't know about it. Well, then all of a sudden time goes by and then their audience grows. And that's when the core fans start saying, oh, they've sold out, if you were. Mm-hmm. They've gone mainstream. And it loses the potency that it held for the fans when they were just sort of that, call it an indie band or just sort of the smaller band. I think you can apply that same sort of a thing to this role-playing issue. Mm-hmm. So for it to go truly mainstream, it's got to do something to appeal to that mass audience. And really to do that, I think it has to lose some of its intricacies and it has to become a lot more simple, like what Chris is saying.
Well, I think that means
what you're saying is don't think of it as role-playing as we know it right now and what we're talking about on Fear the Boot right now, is it going to go mainstream? I think the answer is no, mm-hmm. because it couldn't. To go mainstream, it changes. It evolves. It has to evolve into something else.
I think you already see this if you look at a lot of the games that are coming out now, particularly from the small press, but not just from them, where the games are getting simpler.
Mm-hmm.
The rules are getting lighter. They tend to be a lot more art heavy. You might have little figurines or something that you use in the game. There's a much more tactile visual element to it. I mean, a lot of these small press RPGs are basically just pamphlets, and they're great games. But what they've done is they've taken a lot of the detail, a lot of the simulation, a lot of the crunch out, and focused instead on something much more esoteric that would be easier to sell someone, because they could pick up a book, flip through something, and say, hey, wow, this looks kind of cool. I can be this or I can be that. I can be the giant robot. I can be the cat that protects people from nightmares.
No, you can't.
Whatever.
I won't let you.
You know, going back to Pat's example of a band, though, what brought them to the mainstream point wasn't just the band and their work. It was the fans listening to it, them spreading the word. If it were to go mainstream, yes, there would have to be something the companies would have to do. You would have to do these changes. But it's the fans that also would have to stand up. It's people doing podcasts, people just playing the game. Evangelize your hobby.
And you know, I also think that it is, I think you are seeing it expanding. The marketplace is expanding. You talked about games like Fallout and you mentioned BioShock, but I think Fallout's a good example. You've got an overlap of audience there. You've mm-hmm. got your role players that play Fallout and love it. You've also got your gamers that maybe they haven't done any role playing, but they're the hardcore gamers. They play Fallout. So right there, you've already got some cross-pollination. And I think that kind of a thing is what you're seeing. So traditionally, there's been some, those gamers that just like your computer gamers or console mm-hmm. gamers have some reluctance or, you know, to go to role-playing. But I think that's the kind of thing that's going to continue and it's going to go from
you
there.
You know, I talked to a guy one time. And man, I wish I knew what his name was because he listens.
Let's call him Bob.
I think he listens to the show. I think I met him at a con and I don't even remember what I had for lunch yesterday. But I met this guy and we were talking and I asked him how he got into role-playing games. And he says that he used to never play role-playing, never even heard of them before. But he plays video games and he loves video games, loves them. And so he wanted to learn about them. And so instead of learning about the programming end of it, he wanted to learn where the hell these things come from. where these people get these ideas for role-playing games? And he started looking into it and asking questions, and he found the obvious answer, that video games, especially the role-playing game aspects within role-playing games, come from tabletop role-playing games. And he was like, wow, that's really interesting. And so interesting, in fact, that I really want to play role-playing games. And the concept really worked for him. It was an easy transition. And that's how it should be. And I don't say that just because I'm a big role-playing game fan, but that logic really resonates with me as a person. Unfortunately, that's not how the logic works with the mainstream public.
No, but I think there are opportunities there. An example I'll point to that just came out is Batman Arkham Asylum. There are two things I want to point out about the game. One is that if you do all the Riddler challenges, you will unlock character bios, which will talk about their history in the comic book and even give you the comic book where they first appeared. It gives you a real sense of, if you like Batman, this is where he came from and this is where you learn more.
It's a nice window into a larger universe.
That's awesome.
The second thing they did that I think is fantastic is they shipped a comic book with the game.
Mm-hmm.
Not the special edition, the regular. I'm not saying it's not in the special edition, but I mean, not just the special edition. In the regular edition of the game, I don't know what the dimensions are on a DVD, but they made a little comic book that's the size of the DVD case, same size as like a video game instruction manual.
I want to say Sin City did that, the movie.
And a lot of the comic book movies have done that.
Had it stuck in there. So as you're sitting there playing the game, or if a friend of yours or a girlfriend or a wife or boyfriend or husband is sitting there watching you play the game, they can sit there and start flipping through this comic. And if they like the story, this may compel them to go out and start looking into Batman comics.
You know, not even comic books are the ones doing that as well. There's a movie called Old Boy, which is a fan-freaking-tastic movie, by the way. It's a Japanese live-action movie. It's based on a manga, and it is brutal as all hell. It is really, really excellent. I highly recommend going to see Old Boy. Actually, I think it might be Korean. Anyway, with the DVD, they shipped the manga as well. You can read that.
But imagine if something like Neverwinter Nights had shipped with quick start rules for D&D. Or imagine if MechWarrior 5...
Nobody would play it, because nobody played Neverwinter Nights.
Well, or imagine if MechWarrior 5... ships with some kind of quick start rules for Battletech or MechWarrior,
or
the role-playing
God
game,
forbid, the minimum effort put in the freaking FASA catalog.
So yeah. Does anyone else here find it really weird that
Catalyst,
10,
yeah.
15 years ago, video games were the things that we were all geeks for playing, and now we're thinking, if we just had role-playing game rules in a video game, then it would be mainstream?
Well, and this is exactly why I don't think the ship has sailed, because in my lifetime, I've watched things like video games go from the closet to the mainstream, and I believe role-playing games can do the same thing. They just...
Now, if we could only get Chris to go from the closet to the mainstream...
That would be good.
The closet.
Tom, come out of the closet.
Tom, come out of the closet, Tom.
But, you know, one thing I wanted to say in that the Dungeons & Dragons cartoon, you know, the old days with Hank and Bobby the Barbarian and whatnot, that cartoon held a lot of nostalgia for a lot of people, whether they played D&D or not. And when they finally released that, the complete series on DVD, in there they included an adventure that was tied to one of the episodes that was kind of considered a prequel adventure to what had happened in one of the episodes of the show. And they statted out all the heroes with 3-5 stats, and they statted out Venger with 3-5 stats. Very, very well done in that sense of it being a good adventure to play. The problem, of course, is that they didn't have any rules in there, but at the very least, it was still something there where you could look at these stats and see what was going on. So that was a good attempt by Wizards at the time to, you know, reach out to those who either A, used to play the game and maybe were thinking about coming back because they got the cartoon set now on DVD, or those who never played and still like the cartoon and now might be able to be interested in that.
Personally, I think that actually proves my point of why it would never go mainstream, because these companies do half measures or nothing to move them into mainstream. They do zero. I think you were bringing up that point, Wayne.
Just to correct you a little bit, that's an argument of why it hasn't happened, not why it can't happen.
But yeah. I don't see them doing this.
Right.
I don't see them making the change. I think that you take the three biggest players out there and they're not doing anything. They are preaching to the converted, and they're selling product. They're making money. That's fine. I don't begrudge them that at all, but, you know, maybe shift a little bit of that marketing dollar into generating new players.
There's any out there that are doing some of these big pushes. I'd like to know about it. Wayne at feartheboot.com. Send me emails. Correct me. If you guys don't
and think... furry porn.
Yeah, if you... No.
We sold maybe pastel or furry porn.
Or maybe feathery. Okay. Maybe feathery porn, but feathery no furry porn. Yeah.
You got any good stuff?
Oh, hell yeah. But
I am very...
I have to say, this whole episode, you're talking about things going mainstream. The only thing that's been going through my mind over and over and over is anything can go mainstream. Look at porn. Porn is now mainstream. Actually, back in the 70s, it was not. It was absolutely the closeted taboo.
The internet is now mainstream because of the porn.
Mainstream.
Yeah. The only distinction I would draw is... human beings have the impulse to tell stories, and we have the impulse to procreate. Guess which one's stronger?
Absolutely.
And guess which one's more accessible?
Yeah.
That's why you have to mix it
together. To look at.
How long does it take to look at a porn picture? How long does it take to learn a role-playing game? Yeah. I mean, I hate to reduce just, you know, to such a...
Maybe if we can combine the two.
I don't know, about 7 seconds to a couple of days.
Wow.
Chris, you should see the looks I'm getting for that comment.
We still
I'm thinking about a porn role-playing game.
Pat's produced... He's like, how can I draw in some money? It's time to go into the porn production company. Yeah.
No, before we go on to something else, though, Dan, I am really serious about that. If there is anything out there that is going on to try to push this hobby, I think we're in a unique place where we can really make a difference. And there are a lot of other people out there, too. So I just want to know what's out there.
You know, in defense of role-playing games going mainstream, I will have to say that now we are in a better place to make role-playing games go mainstream than we were back in the 80s. Back before the whole internet boom, it was fan clubs. You had individual members who were there by themselves, and they would just get news that came in as form of a newsletter or magazine or something like that. That was your fan base. That was the movers and shakers of your fan base, were members of a fan club. There aren't fan clubs anymore. Things like Fear the Boot, or things like Werewolf, or things like Dungeons and Dragons, or whatever, have communities now. These communities interact with each other. They talk with each other. They mobilize together. And I think that if you want to go mainstream, you have to find the mechanism for this, and then you get that community behind it, and get the communities to push it, and get the communities to work for you. And I think that is a big argument against my position of how they'll never go mainstream. The thing is, no one is putting out the answer. No one is putting out that answer of how to get new people who aren't into the hobby in. And once they get that answer, I don't think anybody's going to start pushing these communities to do it and start organizing them and motivating them
to do it. Yeah, because like we were saying, the companies right now are pushing product, not pushing hobby.
Yeah.
They're not pushing the community. They're pushing their product.
Well, I will add another thought on top of that, and it goes back to what I was saying earlier in my example. Do we really want role-playing to go mainstream? Because of the analogy that I made, like with the band, you know, when your band goes mainstream, you don't like it as much.
Not for that reason. I don't want to go
In general, that's what I meant,
though. Want role-playing games to go mainstream because of the communities. I like our small niche communities. I like how everybody knows each other. I like how it's a small town. I like how everybody gets the references. I like how people don't puke all over our communities. I mean, sure, there's flame wars and stuff, and people have been to InWorld and seen what a mess that can be sometimes. But the more people you bring into this, the more the communities explode, the more the community of role player become large and faceless and impersonal.
Kind of like when Usenet died.
We still have a few thoughts left over from the whole thing on one-shot games that we're going to get to one of these years. And yeah. I'm really hoping that we can get the technology straightened out, because we have like was it four interviews?
We've got all these interviews, and we can't get a single one out because the computers and stuff keep crapping. Yeah,
special guest host, technology issues. I think we're
about this close to having to turn in our geek cards.
We have four IT people here. Why can't we get this?
What we're going to do is I'm going to roll back the version of Skype and get a hot recorder back. It's the problem in this chain is Skype. So anyway,
I think the problem in the chain is your face.
That's where we're going to close it out for this one. Hopefully next
week.
Don't
rape me in your van.
I will.
Hopefully.
You can't rape the willing.
Hopefully next
time to start your RPG porn, Pat.
There we go.
Hopefully next week we will have one or more of these interviews or guest host things rolling along as we keep fighting against this. But anyway, rest of you guys, have a great week, and we will catch you on the next show.
Rutabaga.
Later.
We can call it juggling my dice.
I might go diceless.
This has been a production of Fear the Booth, copyright 2009. Listeners are free to use the show in any non-commercial endeavor, as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com. Fear the Boot is also a member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network of shows. You can find other great shows in this network at pulpgamer.com.